You're listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Marcellaro. And this week, my guest is music composer John Lunn in London. John, welcome to the show.
Hi, John. Very, very proud and pleased to be talking to you today.
I'm so honored to have you on the show. You are a classically trained music composer. You're probably best known for scoring the TV drama Downton Abbey, which we loved here, for which you received 2 Primetime Emmy Awards. Your recent work includes the scoring of Grantchester Mysteries, which I loved, Red Planet's epic World War I drama, The Passing Bells, the feature film Electricity, Shetland, my favorite British detective show, I love that, and the music. That's where I first got into your music, even though I had seen Downton Abbey before, and The White Queen, which I'm watching, and for which you received a Primetime Emmy nomination in 2014. And there's so much more. And you're also reimagining Hitchcock's classic, The Lady Vanishes. And then there's Jamestown and some other stuff. So I could go on. You are a very busy person.
I am, John. Yes, I am. I don't know quite how it's got to this extent, but everything I'm doing at the moment seems to go on from one series to another. I mean, television's just gone ballistic here, you know, as well as in the States. And whereas about 10 years ago, you know, a do series might go to 1 or 2, now they go to, you know, 5, 6 mm-hmm. series. So, mm-hmm. And I always, once I've done one series, I always feel like I've kind of cracked the sound world. So I'm always tempted to take the second one on because I think I've done, you know, all the donkey work, but actually there's still quite a lot of work to do. But I'm in a good place at the moment. Just a bit too busy, possibly.
I want to ask you about some of the technical aspects of your work and how you do the production and things like that. But in the first half of the show, we typically talk a little bit about the guest past. I'm fascinated and curious about how you arrived where you are today, how one's life career arc takes you to the spot where you are now. So I want to get into that in the second half of the show. But before that, I want to ask you, no doubt from your accent, you were born in the UK. That's an easy one, right?
Yes. Scotland, in fact.
Oh, yeah. I thought I detected a Scottish accent.
Yeah.
Sound a little bit like Doug Henshaw, actually.
We're both Scottish. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been in London for about 30 years, though, but my accent doesn't seem to have been affected at all.
It's great. So did you grow up and go to school in Scotland?
Yeah, I did. Went to university in
Edinburgh,
Scotland. Perhaps? Glasgow, actually.
Okay.
And then came down to London, you know, and I've been here ever since.
Were you into music at that point, or was that something that developed later in your career?
No, I was I came down to London when I was about 25. I'd just done a sort of postgraduate course at MIT, in fact. I'd been in Boston for a best part of a year at MIT doing a postgrad in computers and music. It was the very early days of computers. I had no idea where it was actually going to lead, but I got a grant from MIT and one from Scotland as well, and it was a fascinating thing to do. But I kind of sort of realised that, you know, Scotland was possibly a bit, you know, wasn't quite going to fulfil my ambitions at the time, and so I came down to London. Yeah,
but what was that? Was it always to compose, to understand the theory of music, and to be a composer? Or were you more into instruments and playing at that point?
I was doing virtually everything. I knew by the time I was 23, I knew I wanted to be a composer. Definitely. I didn't know quite what angle it was going to take. So in fact, I was writing quite a lot of contemporary classical music. At the same time, I was doing a research project into Philip Glass and Steve Reich, but I was also in a pop band.
Good training.
I went from about the age of about 20 to about 30. I didn't quite know where I was going to be in terms of, you know, composing, but I did just about every possible style of music within that 10 years.
Were you making a decent living income-wise, or were you kind of like a starving artist at that point?
I mean, I look back on it now and I wonder what on earth I lived on, you know, how I managed it. But somehow it seemed to be, you know, it seemed to be fine. And then, of course, exercised my mind finally was in my early 30s. I probably had done too many sort of different. I was a bit of a jack of all trades and a master of none, and I wasn't earning very much money. And then, you know, my first child was born, and that gives you a real, you know, kick up the backside. And I thought, I'd fall down and
better get a real job.
And so that to film music. Actually,
how does one get started in being distinguished enough to fall into, you know, scoring films and TV shows? How does that work?
A bit lucky at the time. I mean, I don't think people would get such luck these days. I didn't do my first film till I was about 32. And I'd made quite a lot of contacts. I'd worked a lot with contemporary dance companies, either playing with them or sort of writing music for them. And quite a lot of those people that were involved, you know, either on the design side or even the directing side, were also sort of involved in directing media as well. And it just the two sort of things kind of, you know, came together. I met a couple of people. You know, they asked if you wanted to, you know, do something. I just did all those things. And I was always a very practical sort of musician. I could, if anybody wanted anything in particular, I was pretty good at always being able to kind of, you know, come up with it. You know, I wasn't terribly precious about it all. And I think that worked, you know, for me. And it was a bit difficult for the first 5 years. I went from, you know, job to job. But then, you know, gradually about 25 years ago, it really did begin to take off.
What was the first big paycheck or the first big TV series or movie that you scored? Can you remember?
Yeah, it was, I did a thing called The Cormorant that had Ralph Fiennes in it.
Oh.
It was one of his first things that he'd done. It might have been either his first or his second, and it was called The Cormorant. Yeah, and I got the entire budget for the film and just told to come back and, you know, deliver it. And at that time, it seemed like a lot of money. And now I'd probably complain about it.
First big paycheck is always memorable, though. Yeah.
But, you know, no, and in those days, I was slightly naive, and I thought that, you know, I'd be able to build up my own studio and I'd be able to, you know, record everything and be in control of everything and do the sound engineering. And I very quickly learned that, you know, that was never going to work. I had to find people who knew what they were doing. You know, I found a sound engineer that I could work with. I think the idea of trying to do everything, you know, trying to be a master of everything, was a mistake I definitely made in the first 5 years. Of course, I was trying to save some money and trying to sort of build up my own studio as well. But now, you know, although I do all the composing, I do a lot of delegation.
I wanted to ask you about the composing. You mentioned earlier that when you were at university, you had a small interest in computers. Did you start working with computers to score the music, or how do you do it? Do you do it by hand still?
No,
I haven't done it
for 25 years. I mean, mainly because directors and producers these days, they need to hear a mock-up of what the thing's going to sound like. You know, when I first started out, you could have you know, a director could come round to your house, you could have the picture, you know, on a video, you'd play through it and you'd play the piano kind of live to it and say, it's going to be like this, it's going to be like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for about the last 25 years, you just can't do that. You've got to kind of, you've got to come up with, you know, it's got to, you've got to be able to play the director or the producer. You've got to get pretty close to what the final thing will sound like. So, for instance, in Downton, it was all computerized to begin with, so that everybody could, you know, work out, you know, how it was going to sound.
Is and there a software tool that you use that's notable?
I use Logic and Pro Tools. They're Logic and
Pro Tools. So you're on a Mac?
Oh, I'm on a Mac, yeah.
Oh, we love you. We love you even more.
Well, yeah, I've been on Macs for 25 years, yeah.
Excellent. So one of the friends of the Mac Observer is Jan Hammer, and I first got exposed to that when he did a score for Miami Vice on a little 1984 Mac and a MIDI synthesizer. I wanted to ask you about the mechanics of that. Do you design your score to be augmented by a computer-generated music for different instruments, or is it all done with the live orchestra?
It's now a combination, although to be honest with you, the computer is really just used for mock-ups to play. Take Downton Abbey, for instance. Everything in Downton Abbey was eventually played live. Yeah, I did all the piano myself. But to begin with, I would have done a computerized version of it. But then it all got replaced.
Maybe I can play a little snippet here and you can talk to me about the instruments that are involved. Yes. So I thought I heard a violin.
You did.
I heard piano.
Several of them. Yeah.
Yeah. What else is going on?
It's basically, it's actually quite simple. It's basically a string orchestra of about 30 players. So about, I don't know, 12 first violins, 10 seconds, violas, cellos, and double basses. I'm playing the piano. In the title, what we just heard, there might be a French horn at one point. Or maybe just on the titles. I think that's all it is. I think it's actually just a string orchestra.
Do you do any post-production where you augment with instruments that don't exist in real life? Anything like that? No.
No. Not in Downton Abbey. No, it was all... Okay. Eventually, in the whole series... I ended up using a string orchestra, me playing the piano, a vibraphone, a cor anglais, and sometimes a soprano saxophone, and a French horn. And in the final series, we did use some trumpets. But it was mainly strings and piano, really.
Okay. Well, I have a lot more questions for you, technical questions to ask you about this. But first, we have to take a short commercial break. Folks, we'll be back in about a minute. Stay with us. I'm talking to music composer John Lunn.
Hello there, all you fabulous background mode listeners. I'm Kelly Gamont with the Mac Observer, and I just want to say a few words about how you can support all the things we do. If you're thinking about buying something from Apple, Amazon, or Mac Mall, just go to the Mac Observer's homepage where we have a section called Support TMO, or you can just enter macobserver.com/Apple Store, all one word, and that will take you to our special page for Apple and our other affiliates. If you make a purchase from one of our partners this way, the Mac Observer receives a small compensation for sending business their direction. Pretty cool, right? And you don't pay a penny more. This small fee from our affiliates helps us continue to bring you TMO's daily news, reviews, tips, how-tos, and podcasts like this one. So the next time you're thinking about an online purchase, come to TMO's homepage and support the Mac Observer. Thanks. Back to you, John.
Thank you. I'm chatting with John Lunn, music composer. Very famous, does wonderful music. I'm in love with Shetland, I got to tell you. The first time we saw Shetland and that music played at the beginning, I was hooked. In fact, before your, and I want to ask you about this, before the soundtrack came out, I think it was March, I would fire up Netflix and I would play the opening theme music every couple of weeks just to get my fix to hear that music.
I did get so many requests for that title music, I must admit.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry it took us so long to kind of get it together. I mean, it wasn't that we didn't want to do it. It was just, I just needed some time, you know, to be able to set aside to, because although most of the music was done, it still needs a bit of, you know, I needed to spend 3 or 4 weeks kind of tidying it up and, you know, and trying to, you know, because sometimes when you're doing a soundtrack album, you know, it's not just really quite good enough just to take a, you know, a piece of audio you've done for a cue. You do have to do a bit of editing to try and make it, you know, more mean something when it finally gets onto CD.
Well, that fits into the mechanics of producing the music. One question I had for you that is, do you create the music standalone at the start and then it is then used at judicious places, aside from the titles? Or do you work with the producers on tailoring the music to the what's going to be on the video eventually? And do you create a palette of songs where the director can say, I want this song at this scene? How does that work?
No, I don't create. I take every scene on its own merits. And every cue is newly composed, even in Downton Abbey. Where they used they used my score when they were editing. They had used from previous series, and some of it kind of vaguely worked, but I still did every single cue again because the timing just, you know, didn't really work.
So it's what that means is you're presented with a video and then you score the music in sync with or corresponding to the scenes that you're watching visually.
Basically, I will. The music's kind of like the last thing that goes on. Mm-hmm. So the film will be what we call locked, i.e., the scenes won't change, the length won't change at all.
Right.
And I sit down with the director or the producer, depends who's sort of in charge. It varies these days. And we work out where he or she wants music. What they want the music to do, what they want the music to do that we're not actually seeing in the scene. That's what I always say to them. Well, what do you want the music to do that's not there already?
Really, so the music can emphasize an emotion?
Exactly, yeah. Lead you up a garden path or kind of, you know.
If it's a distant scene from of the Downton Abbey against blue sky, you might have something that kind of reminds one of the serenity of the water and the sky.
Exactly.
Cool.
Yeah, but I only ever compose to the video itself. I very rarely write away from without looking at the screen, and I never switch the dialogue off either. I'm always working to the dialogue. I'm kind of choreographing it to the dialogue. It's a sort of.
Do you do that one instrument at a time? So you have to kind of do it iterative.
Well, on Downton, what I would done, I would have a kind of like a computerized piano where I could sort of improvise a way to it, and I'd get a rough sketch, you know, piano wise. I can imagine what it would sound like on the strings, and then I'd be happy with the structure of it.
Oh, create a foundation first, and then go back and add other instruments.
Yeah, and then add top of it. Shetland's a bit more complicated because. There's quite a lot of electronic, you know, there's quite a lot of analog synths in that, and kind of that's slightly trickier to sort of map out.
I think I can hear that. Let me play a piece of that, and I'm going to ask you about it. That last note, it sounds like some sort of harp or...
it's a celeste.
I'm not so familiar with music, so you'll have to forgive my dumbness.
Yeah.
and that violin at the beginning, is that a special Scottish violin? Because it sounds...
Well, what it is it's not only... It's a very, very good folk fiddler called Dermot Crean. and it is violin, but it's doubled with an alto flute. And this was a bit of a stroke of luck, actually, because I was using the alto flute for other parts of the score. And then when it came to the titles, and I hadn't had the violin in yet, and I thought, well, I wonder what it sounds like with alto flute. And I got an alto flautist to do it. I thought it sounded great. I mean, I wrote the tune, but he had added a few, you know, sort of what we call kind of twiddles and stuff, and they sounded good. And then the violinist came in, and I forgot to mute the alto flute, and he did it along with it. And his twiddles were also slightly different as well, it just sounded so good together.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's haunting. Wow.
Yeah, it just, and it's the fact that they're not quite both playing the same. They're basically in unison, but they're not quite playing exactly the same thing. And it kind of, it sounds almost like like an Aeolian bagpipe or something like that. It kind of, I don't know how it managed, but we did, yeah.
It is amazing. So, the next question I had on my list for you is so now we understand how you sync the music to the video, but do you do any kind of research, visit the locality or read books or talk to the book author when there is one, to sort of study the culture and the kind of, and maybe the instruments that were in vogue at the time? Or do you do anything like that?
I don't really do it in terms of the music. I do like, if it's something that's based on a book, I'd probably read the book. I like to read the scripts, but it's not really my job to conjure up the period. You know, I won't ignore it. I mean, for instance, I'm doing this thing at the moment called The Last Kingdom, which is set in 9th century England. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I've done a bit of research. I bought a lyre, which is one of the instruments that is around and was around in those days, although nobody really knows what kind of music they made. And I do use that. But virtually the rest of the score is all analog synths and real percussion. And there's no attempt whatsoever to get it to sound anything like the 9th century. Well, apart from the fact that nobody knows what the music was like anyway. But my job's really... storytelling, really. It's getting inside people's heads. And quite often the music of the period doesn't really do that. You know, in Downton, music of 1912, I love Elgar, and I did a bit of research on Elgar and Vaughan Williams, but I already knew them already. But actually, if you really, really analyze the music from Downton, it's more like a Coldplay song, but with a kind of, you know, almost early 20th century kind of orchestra, you know, i.e. piano and strings. Really.
So the idea is that you are trying to create an emotion and a mood, and that's sometimes out of bounds of the music of the time. So you're using modern methods to evoke what you need to evoke in the viewer's mind.
Yeah, I'm not trying to recreate 1920s UK.
There are some movies that do that. I mean, like, you know, all that jazz, you know, some movies that try that.
And there was a couple of occasions where we did do that. You know, I did have to do something like that. And there was a couple of occasions where they wanted, you know, kind of like pure Englishness in a way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, there are elements, but really, you know, that, you know, if you analyze that theme tune, it's not that the harmony is much more like Coldplay than it is Elgar.
You mentioned that you look at a locked version of the video, but before that all happens, do you ever get a chance to visit the set and talk to the actors and sort of get a feel for the thing that's going on behind the scenes and the atmosphere and the actors and things like that? Just curious.
I did a lot with Downton because I kind of got they got very reliant on me having an idea. Because there was a bit of music that was, you know, that was in vision in the show itself. There was quite a lot of jazz that was in vision, there was a few songs, you know, Shirley MacLaine had to sing a song, you know, I had to teach her how to sing it. And I'm playing the piano in the scene. You can't actually see me. I think they film it at some point. I had to have a wig and a moustache. And sadly, I hit the cutting room floor. but you can hear me playing the piano in it. And so for Downton, I did go on the set quite a lot, mainly to do those bits where, you know, there was Lady Mary had to sing a song at one point. Mm-hmm. And I've had to organise that and can sort of train them. And then there was some live jazz that had to be sort of organised as well. But on most things, I sort of try to avoid that because it can get quite time-consuming, those things. And usually when something is being filmed, I'm usually on another project.
Right.
You know, waiting for them to, you know, film it and edit it and then give it to me. So I'm still on my previous job, if that makes sense.
Right. But did you ever have time to take the ferry up to Shetland and see what it was like?
You know, that's a shocking thing. I've never been to Shetland.
Oh, you got to try it. You know, the music you create for that show creates this complement to the weather and the sky and the sea so well.
Well, they keep inviting me. And I am determined this time because am I allowed to say there's going to be another series? I think I am allowed to say. Yeah, there's going to be
season 4 just aired in January, February. Yeah. Series 4 in England.
There's definitely season 5. We're definitely doing season 5.
I hope we don't spill any secrets.
I just hope, I can't remember if the producer told me it was. I think it is definitely common knowledge now.
Do you know when it's going to be coming to the US? Because I haven't been able to find it on Acorn or anything like that.
Well, they haven't started filming yet. And
Series 4, the ones that aired.
Oh, Series 4. You haven't seen Series 4 yet?
I can't find an outlet for it because it's not on Acorn. It's not on Netflix. It's not on Amazon Prime.
I think it'll be going on Netflix. All right. I think it'll almost certainly be going on Netflix.
I can't wait. Do you ever develop any like long-term relationships with some of the actors because they're interested in what you do? I saw you doing some tweets with Doug Henshaw from Shetland.
Yeah, I got to know quite a lot of the people from Downton. I knew Maggie Smith independently because my
wife, she's a treasure.
was a friend of hers.
That was a big thing with Downton Abbey. Every time my wife and I would watch the show, we'd go, oh, Maggie Smith is a treasure. She is so good.
I know. So funny. You know. And Dougie, I've never actually met Dougie, but we've exchanged a few emails and tweets and stuff. I mean, I'm determined to actually go up to Shetland this time when they're filming season 5. Mm-hmm. So
cool.
I'm sure I'll meet him then.
Back to the construction of the music. One question I had for you was, how long does it take to actually do a score? And do you do one for each series and then aggregate them later into the soundtrack album? And how long does that process take for each series?
Each series, I mean, like Shetland, for instance, is 6 episodes. So I probably spend about 4 months, maybe.
We should tell the listeners that when I say series, I mean you. I mean season for the US listeners, but you guys call it series.
Yeah, but each season probably takes about 4 months. Downton was slightly longer because there was 11 episodes in each.
What is so time consuming about it? Is it the iteration? The adding of the instruments or the post-production?
It's the whole production, you know, recording. Remember, every cue has got to be recorded. You know, I've got to go to, you know, another studio or record an orchestra. They've got to be organized. Got to get somebody to do all the parts and and the score. Then we've got to mix all the music. You know, I've got to record a piano. It's a lot. It's a big process.
Yeah,
a lot of people involved. There's a lot of money involved in it as well.
Are you feeling like this is profitable work, that you're being paid well now that you're got some experience, or is it still a starving artist kind of thing?
No, it's not starring. No, it's not.
With a couple of Emmys under your belt, you must be in. You must be in demand.
I'm certainly here in Britain. I'm one of the. It'd be fair to say I'm one of the top composers. I haven't been out of work for about 15 years, I think, and I'm just constantly turning stuff.
Have you ever had any offers from U.S. studios because of the work you've done?
I've come very close, but I've never. Obviously, the White Queen is for Stars, and they've just been. They're doing another. They're doing a follow up to the White Princess, which is called the Spanish Princess. Again, that's just for Stars. I might well be doing that. I'm not quite sure how that's going to work out timing wise. In TV, which is what I mainly do now, you kind of have to sort of be in LA kind of to do it because the turnaround is just sort of so quick.
Right.
If I was going to do that, I should have maybe done it about 10 years ago, but the kids were at school and, they were at a sort of delicate stage of schooling. I like London.
And the BBC is keeping you very busy. Probably don't have time.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the stuff I'm getting to do, I'm really happy with. So,
Do you have any time left over for anything else? Any notable hobbies that you want to tell us about?
I like cooking. Cooking's kind of how I relax. I like cooking for the children. I kind of, go to a lot of concerts and theatre. My wife's an artist, so I'm quite... I've been learning more about what modern art really is and how important it is. So, apart from that.
It's nice when you get a little older, you have the luxury of having another career or another interest that you've always wanted to pursue, and then you have the financial liberty to go off and do something cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
I don't know how long I'm going to keep. I just feel that, my work kind of defines me. I'll probably go on till nobody employs me anymore, I think.
Oh, I think you'll be one in demand for a long, long time, based on what I've heard from your music. You're working this, you told me you're working now on, I think, season 3 of The Last Kingdom.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned before, you're also working on Jamestown. I was trying to watch that last night, and it requires a subscription on Amazon Prime, but I'll get around to it. Jamestown sounds pretty interesting. I can't wait to watch that series.
It's interesting. I think they had a bit of difficulty actually selling it to America because, it deals with slavery and, Native American Indians. And so... I think everybody got a bit nervous about it. Those things are dealt with particularly well in it. With the Native American, they speak the proper Indian language. Everything is kind of respected. But I think a lot of broadcasters got a bit nervous about taking it on, about what the American public would of it, because you'd think it'd be ideal, it's about the early days of English settlers in America, in 1620 or 1610. So it's kind of it's a founding of America. But I know that he's on Amazon Prime now. Yeah, he's very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Can't wait to watch it. So we're running out of time. I have time for one last question. Is there anything that you can tell us about that's on the horizon that you're excited about, you want to reveal, or is Jamestown keeping you really busy?
Well, am I allowed to say it? But I think there might be another series of Grantchester.
That's right.
That was going to be because James is so in demand.
Did he ever get the James Bond gig? Because I heard that he was on the list to be the next James Bond.
Not that I know of.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great series.
I think there's going to be another series of that.
Well, from what I've read, not only are they coming back with the original cast for a fourth season, but the series might continue even without the star. I forget his name.
James Norton.
James Norton, yeah. That they might replace him and carry on with the series because it's so popular.
Yeah, well, I think he's almost certainly going to be in the next one, but I don't know whether whether he leaves in that series or, but it's possible again that series might go on
for. You are having so much fun. You're gonna be in business for a long time.
Oh, there's a Downton movie.
Just keeps coming and coming. I bet you think. I mean, how am I going to have time for all this?
I can't. I mean. Well, I mean, we don't. That's not absolutely set in stone either. I think it's getting very, very close. But fingers crossed for that one because that would be a cracker.
All right. Well, this has been very cool. What an exciting journey you've had, and I just can't tell you how excited I am about your music. And I'm sure there are lots of other people who are as well, and will be fascinated to hear your story on this podcast. So I want to thank you again for joining me.
It's a pleasure, John. Thank you.
Folks, you've been listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode, and we'll see you next week. But instead of my normal outro music, I'm going to play the title music from Shetland as we fade out. So, folks, thanks for joining us, and I hope you enjoyed the show. See you next week.